What we're going to do today is we're going to sort of pick up from where we left off last time, but I just want to remind people where we are, what we're talking about here. And we're talking about the Mechirat HaBechorah, the selling of the birthright, Yaakov's offer to Esav to buy the birthright, and Esav's agreement to sell it. Now, we were looking at the Midrashim. And I think we looked at sort of the essential ones that I wanted to see last week. And we'll continue with the second sheet, the one that you should have gotten today. If you don't have it, I'm going to be putting it up on the screen. If we still have time, we'll go back to those Midrashim. But in essence, what we have here is let's just read through the Psukim again over here. We're in Bereishit Chapei, Genesis 25:29. Vayazed Yaakov Nazid. Yaakov cooked a soup. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. Esav came from the field and he was tired. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov, and Esav said to Yaakov, Halitei nina min ha'adom hazeh. Literally, pour down my throat now from this red stuff. Halitani means pour down my throat. And as we pointed out last time, it's a form of feeding that is used with camels. Okay. So you ask him to just pour the this is the only use of this verb in Tanakh. Ki ayef anochi, because I am tired. Al ken karashmo Edom, therefore he called his name Edom, red one, ruddy one. And Edom, we said, is who's calling him his name? Is it the Pasuk? Is it Esav himself? There are different ways to read that. Vayomer Yaakov, Michra kayom et bechorat chali. And Yaakov said, sell like this day your birthright to me. Vayomer Esav, hineh anochi holech lamut. Esav said, here I am going to die. V'lama zeli bechora, and what do I need a birthright for? V'yomer Yaakov hishav'ali kayom, and Yaakov said, swear to me like the day, meaning that you will sell the bechora to me. V'yishav'alo, and he swore to him. V'yimkor et bechorato liYaakov, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. V'Yaakov natan le'esav lechem unezid adashim, and Yaakov gave Esav bread and a lentil soup, vayochal, and he ate, vayesht, and he drank, vayakam, and he got up, vayelech, and he went, vayivez Esav et habchorah, and Esav despised, disgraced the birthright. Okay, the setting for this in terms of the Midrash is that this is the day that Esav comes back from the field from hunting. And he sees Yaakov cooking. We said again, these two brothers is sort of a very different approach here. Esav is the hunter. He's the man who's out there in the field. Yaakov is the domestic character here, right? He's cooking a soup. Again, this is not explained in the verses, but the Midrash says this was the day that Abraham had died. And Yaakov is preparing the food for the mourners, right? For his father. And he's cooking his soup. Esav comes in. He says, give me some of that or pour it down my throat. Yaakov says, sell your bechorah to me, sell the birthright to me. Esav says, I'm gonna die, I might as well sell, what do I need the bechorah for? And then he sells the bechorah. Yaakov gives him food, and that's the end, pretty much the end. And then Esav eats, drinks, gets up, and goes. Okay, now it's a strange story. A lot of people understand it in a way that very simply, Esav is starving to death. He's afraid he's going to die. He sells the bechorah for his so he doesn't die of starvation, which is, I guess one way to read it. What we're going to do now, though, is we're going to look at how the mostly the Rishonim look at this story. Okay. So I suggest again, since I'm don't know how to split screen, which I should, but I don't. If you open your Tanachim to Bereishit Chafzayin, we can sort of, that's Genesis 27. We can sort of, I'm sorry, Genesis 25. We can move back and forth between the verses and the commentators. So let's start, first of all, by looking at Genesis 25, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, which is verse 31. And what we're going to do is we're going to start with Rashi and just pick out Rashi's sort of crucial, critical points that Rashi makes about this text. And then we're going to move through other Rishonim. Okay, and let's see what we come up with. So the pasuk that we're focused on now is Bereishit Chaf Hei Lamed Aleph, verse 31. And Esav says, you know, pour this food into my mouth because I am hungry. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31. Vayomer Yaakov, and Yaakov said, Michra Kayom, sell like the day. Kitagumo, sell like the day your birthright to me, right? Michra Hayom. Rashi questions this because the word we would expect here is Michra Hayom. Sell it today. What do you mean sell it like the day? And Rashi says, as the Targum translates, Kitagumo, Kiyom Dilhein, like today. Kayom Shehu Barul, like the day that is clear. Here, the day is being sort of more understood as daytime or sun time, the time of day. Kach mechol li mechira brua. In other words, on this reading, and I think this is going to be the question: who benefits from the sale of the birthright? Why would Esav give up the birthright? What's going on here? Why is this happening in this way? So according to Rashi, when Yaakov says, sell like the day, he's saying, I want a clear sale. I want it to be very obvious that this, there's no doubt that you sold me the bechora. Okay. And the thing that, what is the bechora? And here I think it's kind of important that we ask another question. And again, the more people whose cameras are on, the happier I am. So please. What is Yaakov trying to buy here? What's Yaakov trying to buy here? I mean, if you think about it, you can't sell your birth order to anybody. Right? Who got born first? Esav got born first. Is he trying to buy birth order? He can't do that. God determined the birth order here. Initially, right? That's something that is determined by God. The birthright, is he trying to buy Esav's inheritance, right? You know, that would make some kind of sense here. Firstborn children, firstborn sons were always favored in terms of the apportionment of the inherited property. Why is Yaakov so preoccupied with doing this? And why, if the birthright is something worth having, is Esav so cavalier about simply giving it away? Okay, now these are obvious questions, but we don't always think about it because the story is so iconic, it's so familiar that we don't always notice what's happening over here. So according to Rashi, Yaakov thinks he's buying something specific, and so too does Esav. So let's go back to the screen, to the text, and let's see what the bechora is. Mechra kayom bechoratali, sell like the day, clear as day, your birthright to me. Rashi says, lefi sheavodah ba'bechorot, because the service of God was through the firstborn. Amar Yaakov, Yaakov said, Ein rasha ze kedai sheyakriv lakadosh baruch hu. This wicked man is not fitting to sacrifice to the Holy One, blessed be He. In other words, what Yaakov is trying to buy is the religious privileges of the Bechor, right? By the way, this idea that the firstborn is dedicated to God is found in Halakha, right? Pidyon HaBen, we redeem the firstborn. The idea that even in Christian society, the idea that the first son would go to the church, after the direct inheritor, the next son would go to the church, that kind of thing, that he wants to buy the privilege of serving in the Beit HaMikdash or in the Mishkan and bringing sacrifices. But the way that Rashi frames it is he doesn't want to take the birthright away from Esav because he wants it for himself so much as that he doesn't want Esav to have it because Esav is not fitting for the Bechorah. Rashi sort of continues this reading here. If you take a look at Pasuk Lamed Bet, verse 32, Vayomer Esav, Hine Anochi Holech Lamut, and Esav said, here, I am going to die. V'lama Zeli Bechorah. And why do I need, what is it to me, a birthright? And again, that's sort of a non sequitur. Here I am going to die. Well, we're all going to die, right? That doesn't mean we go around selling our birthrights, right? Here I am going to die. What do I need the birthright for? And that phrase, I think, Hine anochi holech lamut, we're going to see this as we look through the commentators, is sort of a key to understanding Esav's character and Esav's emotions about the Bechorah. So Rashi reads it as following. Again, he's quoting from the Midrash. Amar Esav said to Yaakov, Ma tiva shel avodazo? What is the nature of this, not teva, but the quality of this service of God? Right? That's what you want to buy from me. Amar lo, Yaakov said to him, Kama azharot v'onshin umitot tluyin ba. There are several prohibitions and punishments and deaths that are attached to this Bechorah. In other words, the privilege of serving God and bringing korbanot to him, bringing sacrifices to him, is connected to penalties, right? Keota sheshaninu, as we learned, Eluhen shebimita, these are those who get the death penalty in the Beit HaMikdash or die, actually, bidei shamayim, by the hands of heaven, shtuyei yayin ufuroei rosh, those who are drunk when they serve God, or those whose heads are not covered, right? People whose head is, or hair is wild. By the way, we're all familiar with the story of Nadav and Avihu, Aharon's sons, who lose their lives because they serve God improperly, right? That's another sort of interesting topic. But Yaakov says, look, this avodah is attached to punishments too. It comes at a high price. What does Esav say? Amal, Esav said, Ani holech lamut al yada im ken ma chefetz liba. I am going to die through this avodah. If I get the privilege of doing the avodah, I will die by its means, you know, through it. So why should I want it? Why do I want it? In other words, it's sort of interesting if you think about it. Who is Esav? What does he do professionally, so to speak? What is he?
He's a hunter.
Hunter.
It's a dangerous profession. Hunters risk their lives every day, right? He's not afraid of death as a hunter. What's he afraid of? He's afraid that he will not meet the standard necessary to be able to do the avodah. And what's the point? It'll just kill him, right? At the same time, and now clearly in the Midrash, Yaakov is portrayed as showing him the dark side, if you will, of the service of God. But Yaakov is not afraid of that. Yaakov is not afraid of that happening to him. Well, he's not afraid of the penalties that come with coming close to God. Okay, so that's the sale of the Bechorah as far as they are both portrayed, and the mention of death is not a non sequitur for Rashi. It's the reason why Esav rejects the Bechorah. And then, of course, Esav does indeed sell the Bechorah. He eats, he drinks, he gets up, and he leaves. And the Pasuk says, Vayivez Esav et ha-Bechorah. See what's bothering Rashi? Esav despised the Bechorah. What's bothering Rashi here is, in what way is he despising the Bechorah? He doesn't say nasty things about the birthright. He doesn't. It's not obvious that just because he ate and drank and sold it that he despised it. Rashi says, Heiv ha-katuv al rish'o, the text, the biblical story, right? Bears testimony to his wickedness. Shebiza avodato shel makom. He despised the service of God, right? Esav is like, I don't need this, right? Somebody offers you this treasure, he doesn't want it. Okay. Now, the Rashban does something very interesting here. He's not the only one who does it, but he may have been the first to talk about it in this way. The Rashban looks at the sale itself, not just the motivations. Why does he want to sell? Why does he want to buy? What's going on here in the sale? But the actual sale itself. And he also looks at the words, Michra Kayom, sell like the day. Klomal, the Rashbam says, which is to say, L'altar, immediately. Miyad mechol lichelek bechoratcha, ha'oi lecha. Immediately sell to me the portion of your birthright that you deserve, v'mamon avi, in my father's possessions, v'mamon she'etein lecha, for money that I will give you. Now here he is reading bechorah in the sense in which we do halachically today, or you know, in halacha, according to Jewish law, the firstborn is entitled to twice the amount of inheritance of any of the other children, right? The Rashbam's reading is a little radical here, and it's important. What is Yaakov asking him to sell? Sell me the portion of your birthright, which belongs to you, which is yours in father's money, for money that I will give you today. Okay? And afterwards, I will give you food as testimony and to establish the fact. Kiderech shematzinu, as we find, vayachlu sham al hagal. This is talking about when Lavan chases Yaakov, and then they make a covenant together. And they sit together and share a meal. L'kiyum brit, to fulfill the covenant, bein Lavan li'Yaakov, to fulfill a covenant between Lavan and Yaakov. Now, the Rashbam does two things here, which I think challenge what might be the child's eye view of what's happening here. Yaakov wants to buy the monetary, the financial, if you will, the financial arrangements that go with the birthright from Esav for money that he will give him now. The food is just sealing the deal. Let me see if I can explain that again. It happens in a few places in Tanakh, and it happens today with the business lunch, right? You sign a big contract. What do you then do? It's a very common custom, and it's in many cultures. You have a drink together, or like in Israel, we do a haramat kosit, right? You have drinks and burekas, or you have a business dinner or a business lunch or some kind of celebratory drink or meal to seal the deal. On this reading, what did Esav sell his birthright for? What did he want Yaakov to give him?
So, the Nezidat Hashem.
No, money. Money. Oh. Let's look at the Rashbam again. I knew people weren't going to get this. You know, I knew because it so goes counter to our common perception of these psukim, look at what he says. He uses the word michra, sell it to me. Generally speaking, when somebody says, sell me something, what do they mean? I will pay you money, right? Okay, so take a look at it again. Marilyn, could you just mute yourself? I hear myself. Rashbam says, like this. That's okay. Michra kayom, sell like the day. Sell to me immediately. Miyad, immediately, mechol li chelek bechoratcha, sell me the portion of your birthright, hara'ui lecha, that you deserve, bimamon avi, meaning in my father's money. I want you to sell you the rights to double the property that comes from father's estate. Is that clear? Do you see it in the language of the Rashbam? Okay. What do I want to give you for it? Bimamon she'etein lecha, for hard, cold cash right now. Okay. There's father's estate, and Yitzchak is a very, very wealthy man. I want you to sell me your portion in father's estate. You're entitled to double. Sell it to me for money that I will give you right now. Va'achalkach, and afterwards, etein lecha ha'ma'achal le'edut le'kiyum, I will give you food as to sort of seal the deal. Edut means testimony. Kiyum means to make the deal a lasting one. Kiderech shematzinu, as we find, when Yaakov and Lavan make a covenant, after Yaakov leaves Lavan's house, and it says, after they make the covenant, and they make a monument to that covenant, the gal, vayochlu sham al hagal, they ate there at the monument, l'kiyum brit, in fulfillment of the covenant, between Laban and Yaakov. Okay? So according to the Rashbam, Esav's request for soup gives Yaakov the idea of saying, you know what? I'll give you soup as part of our seal-the-deal meal if you sell me the Bechorah from father. Now that automatically makes this not a great bargain. So why does Esav agree to it? Okay? The Rashbam has an answer for that. What is Esav's answer in Pasuk Lamed Bet again at verse 32? Hine anochi holech lamut. Here I am going to die. What does that mean? Bechol yom ani holech latzur chayot b'ya'arim hametzuyim b'ya'arim. Every day I go out and hunt animals in the forests. Hametzuyim sham dubim ba'arayot v'chayot ra'ot, within which are found lions, bears and lions and dangerous animals. V'ani mesukan lamut. I am in danger of dying. Meaning, I lead a life, Esav says, in which I could die at any time. He has a dangerous job. Lama zeli lahamtin chelek v'chora la'achar mitat avinu. Why should I wait for my portion of the birthright till after the death of my father? Okay. And by the way, the Rashbam quotes his own father, Rabbi Meir, his Rabbi Shima, I don't remember, Ben Rabbi Meir. He quotes his own father. This is his father's interpretation. I am going to die. As Esav says, I am going to die means what? I've got a really short life expectancy. I'm one of those people who might predecease my father. In fact, it's likely I will predecease my father. So what does Esav want? He wants cash in hand rather than a lot more later. That's how the Rashbam reads it. He's not the only one who reads it that way. What does that say about Esav? What does that say about Esav? Well, one of the things it says about Esav is that he is a person who chooses to live dangerously, right? He chooses to live dangerously. He doesn't worry too much about the consequences. And the imminence of death, his constant awareness that he could die at any time, instead of making his life feel more precious, makes him kind of nihilistic, right? Like, I'd rather have what I can have now, because I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. Better a bird in the hand than two in the bush, right? Better Yaakov pays me cold hard cash right now. I'm not going to live too long anyway. He does not say to himself, maybe I should start taking up shepherding. He does not say to himself, well, you know, let's delay gratification to get a greater return later. Esav is a man who lives in the moment and arguably only in the moment, right? That's who he is. It's a kind of snapshot of the brothers in the Rashbam's reading. And again, I maintain that the key to this story is, Hine anochi holech lamut. Here I am going to die. Esav's view of life and death is what colors everything he does. And here in this critical moment, when he's willing to sort of like blow off his own inheritance, because only the moment matters to Esav. Only the moment is what he lives for. Life is not precious. Life is to be spent, right? You know, sort of even thrown away in a sense. Let's keep going because the Rashbam goes on. Rashbam says the following. Vayimkol, and Rashbam says, if we look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel, take a look at your Tanachim, Vayomer Yaakov Hishab Ali, and Yaakov says, vow to me, Kayom, like the day, vow to me clearly that you will not contest this sale. Vayishabalo, and he made an oath to him, Vayimkol et Bechorato Yaakov, and he sold his Bechorah to Yaakov. The Rashbam says that the plain sense of these words is Vayimkor et Bechorato, he sold his birthright, Vidamim, for money. Damim in the language of Chazal, it's also found in Tanakh, can either mean blood or it can mean money, right? So he sold it to him for money. V'achal ken Yaakov natan le'esav gomel. And afterwards, Yaakov gave Esav soup and bread and kiminhag b'nei adam l'kiyum davar, as is the custom of people when they want to affix or establish something. I think we do that a lot, by the way. I think we do that a lot. Many ceremonies, life change ceremonies, many weddings, engagements, britot. We mark those occasions or give them added formality and, you know, sort of fix them with money, with a meal, right? It's like sharing the deal, deciding to share the deal. And here the Rashbam says, and this is sort of interesting, Vayivez Esav et ha-bechora, Esav despised the bechora. His reading also here is kind of unique. Lefi shelasof nitcharet al kach. Because afterwards he regretted it. Ki dichtiv, as it says, later in Perek Chaf Zayin, when he's complaining to his father that Yaakov has stolen the blessings, he says, et bechorati lakach. He took my birthright, and now he has also taken my blessings. Lachain higdim kan lehodia. Shtuto ata. Therefore the text comes to make known to us his foolishness now. Bishvil achila bizat ha-bechora. Because of food, he despised the bechora. Aval basof haya mitcharet. But in the end, he regretted it. And this also, I think, might be kind of interesting. It's a kind of like, what the heck philosophy, right? Why not? Why not do it right now? Why not take it? I might be dead tomorrow. Why not? Afterwards, when he lives longer than he perhaps expected to live, he says, oh, I threw it away, right? I threw it away. Now, the Chizkuni also has another interesting reading, because again, if the key phrase here that explains what Esav is doing is, here, I am going to die, the Chizkuni has a different reading, and the Chizkuni's reading is also extremely revelatory. Hine anochi holech lamut. Here I am going to die, says the Chizkuni, so why not sell you my bechora? Irushat Eretz Yisrael tuliya bechora. The inheritance of Eretz Yisrael was dependent upon the birthright, right? In other words, it's given to, from Abraham to Yitzchak, Yitzchak to Yaakov, that covenant of inheriting Eretz Yisrael. Vahayirusha eina ba'ad la'achar 400 shana. And the inheritance of the land would be only after 400 years. If we go back to the story of Brit Ben Haftarim, when God makes the covenant with Abraham, he says, your children will be strangers and slaves in another land, and they will oppress them, and it'll take 400 years, right? That's, you know, so the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael is a very gradual, a very slow process, and it will only culminate at the end of 400 years. Ki dichtiv, as it says in Bereshit, in the story of Abraham and Brit Ben Haftarim, v'inu otam 400 shana, they will torment them for 400 years. Uchtiv, and it also says there, v'dor revi'i yashuvu heinam, the fourth generation will return to Eretz Yisrael. V'ho'il me'eno chai ad oto hazman, and since Esav is not going to live for 400 years, because nobody lives for 400 years after the period of the flood, Hainu, hine anochi holech lamut, which is, here, I am going to die. Ma revach yesh li ba? What benefit? What do I profit? What profit do I get from the bechora? Uma ani mafsid limochra? What do I lose by selling it? Velama ze li bechora? And what do I need the bechora for? If I would live till the time of the inheritance, that I myself would inherit it, I would not sell it. So for the Chizkuni, okay, so we now have three different readings of what the Bechora is. For Rashi, the Bechora is the service of God, right? That birthright is the service of God. For the Rashbam, the birthright is Yitzchak's property, right? For the Chizkuni, the birthright is Eretz Yisrael, right? The inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. And in each case, here I'm going to die means something else. For the Chizkuni, it means, listen, the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, I will be long buried before that comes about. My children will inherit. I won't inherit. What do I need it for? And, you know, what benefit do I have in holding on to it? And what do I lose by selling it? Because I'm not going to inherit it myself. And here again, for Esav, there is no thought of a future that does not include himself, right? Or another way to put it is this. One of the things that parents do, parents or, you know, how should I put this? I think most Jewish people think of themselves as somebody's eventual ancestors, right? In other words, we think of ourselves as passing on a heritage, as passing on a future, right? We know that for us it may not be good, but for our children it will be good, or we will make it good, right? We pass on our values because we want our children to have them, and their children after them, and their children after them. For Esav, if it's not me, it's not worth it, right? He lives in the immediate moment. The inheritance of Eretz Yisrael is not something I, Esav, will benefit from. So if I could sell it, why not? I'll get something again, bird in the hand, right now. Hard, cold cash, right now, what I want. I don't lose anything by selling it because I'm not going to benefit. directly from this. It is a completely, again, nihilistic view, and it is a view which fits with the impulsive nature, the impulsive and the rather cruel nature of Esav, right? That is part of his identity as hunter. Okay, so we have three different views of what the Bechorah is, what the birthright is, and we have three different views of what death means to Esav in that context. Let's go back to the Mikoro, to the sources. And now we come to the Ramban. So let's take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban quotes a pasuk from Mishle, Vayivez Esav et habechora, and Esav despised the birthright. Baz ledavar yechabelo. A person who despises something, it will be ruined for it will ruin him, or he will be ruined by it. Aval kvar amar hatam sheba'avuro na'ot lemechira. The text already tells us the reason why for Esav it was fitting to sell the bechora. He saw the value in selling the bechora. Mipnei she'haya holech lamut b'tzudo hachayot, because he was going to die from hunting animals. And it would be likely that he would die in his own father's lifetime. The birthright has no value until after one's father dies. What good will the bechorah do for him? I think Ramban may be influenced here by something that Esav says later. He says, Yikrivu yume evel avi, when the days of my father's mourning draw near, I will kill my brother. Right? He says that at the end of the parsha. Unless my father dies before me and I'm more likely to die before my father, and again, this is a man who has chosen a dangerous way of life and doesn't seem to care about even his own life, what do I need the birthright for? Ve'amar, and it says, Vayochal vayesh vayakam vayelech vayivez. It says he ate and he drank, he got up and he left, and he abused the bechorah, he despised the bechorah. Ki achar she'achal v'shata chazar hasadeh el tzedo. And here the Ramban focuses on something else. He says, he ate, he drank, he got up, and he went. Where was he going? Back to hunting, right? He goes back to, he doesn't pause for a moment to contemplate the implications of his death, right? He shows in this his despising of the Bechorah. V'zo sibat bizui ha-Bechorah. This is the reason that he despises the Bechorah. Ki en chefetz b'ksilim rak sheyochlu v'yishtu v'yasu chefetzam b'itam v'lo yachushu liyom machar. Because foolish people desire only to eat and to drink and to do whatever they feel like right at their moment, and they don't think about tomorrow. And again, I think, I sort of can't escape the feeling that for Esav, the danger in which he finds himself, instead of heightening his appreciation for his life, just cheapens it. It just cheapens it. He does not say, I'd rather live longer and maybe get the Bechorah or maybe accomplish something different in life. No, he would rather live in the moment and not in a good way. Right? It's not because he's concentrating hard on his thoughts. He does not, or another way to put this might be this. There are people who, when they are confronted with their mortality, right? And we are periodically, we're confronted with our mortality. A friend of our age dies. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we think about what might happen to us this year or next year. Someone gets a medical scare or there's a war. Okay. We confront our mortality when we confront our mortality for most people, even if they don't dwell in that moment, it makes them think. Esav doesn't want to think. There's not an ounce of contemplativeness in him. It has to be boom, 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 boom. It has to be constant. As the Ramban says, do what I want when I want to right now and not think about tomorrow.
But with respect, a warrior who cares about his own life and what he can lose loses their edge. Somebody who doesn't
care. He's not a warrior. He's a hunter. He has a choice. He has a choice. But I want to finish this and then I'll take questions. He has a choice about his profession, right? He could be a farmer. He could be a shepherd. He could steward his father's riches. He could be steward of his father's riches. He's not a man who is fighting, who's fighting a battle. He's choosing to be a hunter. It fits with what his worldview is, right? Nobody assigns these identities to Yaakov and Esav. They choose them, right? When the lads grow up, and they separate into different places. Okay, now the next thing that we're going to be looking at here in the Sfarno, and the Sfarno isn't the only one who says this, but there are a number of people who talk about this question. I didn't bring all of them. The Or HaChaim is a long, learned piece about the halachic implications of the sale of the Bechorah. So what happens is Esav says, you know, what do I need the Bechorah for? You know, okay, you want to buy it, right? What does Yaakov say in Pasuk Lamed Gimel? Vayomer Yaakov, Hishab Ali Kayom. Vow to me, take an oath, right? Take an oath to me today, like the day. Vayishavalo, and he took the oath. And he sold the Bechorah to Yaakov. What does the Sfarno say? Hishav Ali, vow to me, Mipnei heyota kinyan adavar she'en bo mamash, since it is an acquisition of something that has no substance, hashvua timalei chesrono, the oath will fill what is lacking. So let's stop here for a moment. A number of parshanim, the Or HaChaim in particular, I didn't bring it, but not only, the Netziv also says this. What are you selling when you sell a birthright? Can you sell a birthright? Arguably, you can't sell a birthright. What are you purchasing when you purchase a birthright? Right? If you say it's his portion in his father's wealth, but as long as his father is alive, that portion of wealth doesn't belong to either Yaakov or to Esav, right? If you say it's the avodah of the service of God that has not come into the world yet, how can you buy that, right? If you say it's the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, it is not in anybody's possession. In other words, is legally speaking, in terms of actual sale of anything, is a sale taking place. And several of the parshanim, several of the commentators essentially say that's why you need an oath. Even an oath, if you think about it, is a little problematic. You're taking an oath on something you don't really possess. You don't really own yourself at the moment, right? By the way, notice nobody is saying he's selling the birth order. Nobody's saying that Yaakov wants to buy the birth order. You can't. That you certainly can't buy. Okay. So the oath is there because Yaakov, if we're saying that Yaakov isn't really buying something that actually exists yet, right? It's all in the future. It's all a matter of futures, right? It's all a matter of what might happen or could happen. Theoretically, Yaakov could also die before his father dies, right? Nobody owns anything here. Nobody owns anything. That's why we need an oath. And the oath is, I promise that I will not repent of, essentially, I promise I will not repent of my decision to give you the Bechorah, which, of course, according to the Rashbam, eventually he does. So The oath here has to do with the fact, and this I think is perhaps the more interesting part of what's going on here. Let's just finish this part. And he sold his birthright for a price that the two of them made up between them. And the text does not bother telling us what it is. In other words, the Sfarno reads like the Rashbam. When it says he sold the birthright, it wasn't for the food. It wasn't for the mess of soup. It was for some price that they had talked about, which the text doesn't record because, you know, 2,000 years later, it's not going to be a meaningful statement. We don't know what he sold it for. What was the price? So if we need the oath to make the sale real, if we need the oath to make it a real sale, then why tell us this story if indeed Esav didn't actually sell and Yaakov didn't actually buy something that neither of them can possess? I think the story is here more than anything beyond the technicalities, right? Of did he buy, did he sell, what was he buying, what was he selling, to tell us or to sharpen for us the contrast between these two worldviews of Yaakov and Esav, of Yitzchak's sons. What is the essence of each? What are they each about? And this, it seems, is very clear. It's very clear to the commentators, to the Midrash. Yaakov is a man who lives for the future, not just for the present. Esav is a man who lives in exactly the moment, in exactly the moment, with all the implications of that. You'd imagine, by the way, that may also explain why he's such a dangerous person. Person who is not afraid of throwing away his own life is not a person you want to have much to do with, right? He's a dangerous person. Okay. The Sfarno says the following. By the way, the Sfarno is very interesting. If you get a chance to read it, you should. His whole discussion of the whole piece, I only picked out these two excerpts. And Esav despised the Bechorah. Gam achal ma'aseh hayta ha'bechorah be'inav bilti ra'uya la'oto ha'mechir shepasku. Even after the story's over, the Sfarno says, the bechorah in his eyes was not worth whatever price they had agreed on. Uvechein hitpael shelo nit'ane ha'mochel ki lo haya ha'mimkar shave etzlo kol kach. And from this it is explained that the buyer doesn't argue or complain later with Yaakov because the sale didn't matter to him so much, right? You might have expected at some point in the story for Esav to confront Yaakov and say, look, you paid for the Bechorah, you didn't pay me enough, I sold it too cheaply. Even afterwards, he doesn't look back. He doesn't look back with regret. And although the Rashbam, is it the Rashbam or is it the Ramban? I don't remember. I think it's the Rashbam, that afterwards he regretted it, right? The Rashbam says, afterwards he regretted it, he says to his father, he took my bechorah and he took my brachot. I think there, it's not because he regrets it. This is, you know, years later, but because he's angry over the brachot, and he's sort of throwing the bechorah into the pot too. You know, look what my brother did to me. He's arguing with his father. Okay. We have a few more minutes. Let's just do the Al Sheikh, and then we'll finish the rest next week, Bezrat Hashem, and then I'll take some questions. Okay, so the Al Sheikh says the following. And his focus is on Vayomer Esav, which is Pasuk Lamed Bet, verse 32. Hine Anochi Holech Lamut. Here I am going to die. And the Al Sheikh says something very, I think, very commonsensical and straightforward about what the pshat of these words is. Hinei pale. These words are wondrous, meaning they're words that we have questions about. Ki adayin ben tet zayin shana haya ve'ech haya holech lamut. He was still, I'm sorry, tet bav shana. He was only 15 years old at the time of this story. So what do you mean, I'm going to die? Or let's put it this way. You go on a really murderously difficult tiyul, and you say, oh, I'm going to die. I'm exhausted. It doesn't mean you're going to die, and it doesn't mean you think you're going to die, right? It can't mean, as some simple or oversimplistic readings of the story take it, that he sells the bechorah because he's afraid that if he doesn't get some soup in his body, he's going to die. No, can't mean that. He was a young man. And again, where the Alshech gets the age 15 from, I think it's from Seder Olam Rabbah. But even if we say he was not 15, he was still a young man. He was not yet 40. We know that from the rest of the story. Omnam, however, hinei yadanu ki miyom yivaled ish holech lamut. Ein al ha'alshich. He says, but indeed, we know from the day that a person is born, he's going to die. In other words, this is not news. Hinei anochi holech lamut, here I am going to die, is a basic existential for reality for anybody who has normal intelligence. Here I am going to die. Now, it's true, children don't live with a strong awareness of death. That's not something that they tend to think of. But even a teenager knows, right? A 10-year-old knows, at least in theory, that everybody dies, you know. My great-grandfather died. Eventually, I'm going to die. I mean, I don't worry about it too much. Maybe now in some places more. But we all know we're going to die, okay? Kima amar hatana, as it says in Pirkei Avot, ulan ata holech, where are you going? Limkom rima v'toleya. In other words, you're born in this way and you die in that way. It says in Kohelet, ki holecha adam el beit olamo. Okay, that a person is going to his final home, meaning eventually we all end up in the grave. Okay, and he points out that all of these expressions of death are used shehu l'shon habaya. It's in the present tense. Hinei anochi holech lamut, Esav says, I am going to die in the present tense. Ki holech adam el beit olamo, Kohelet says. It says in Ecclesiastes, because a person is going to his final resting place. Right? La'an ata holech, where are you going? Also in Pirkei Avot, in the present tense. Ki reshito hu holech lamut. From the beginning, we're all going to die, meaning we are born mortal. We have bodies. Our bodies will eventually give out and we will die. We're all mortal. Od yadanu merazal. We also know from Chazal, ki Yaakov ve'Esav chilku olamot, that Yaakov and Esav divided worlds. Esav ha'olam hazev, Yaakov ha'olam haba. Esav took this world, Yaakov took the world to come. And because of this, Esav did not have a portion in the world to come. It's a very Alshich reading. Alshich was a Kabbalist. He says, when Esav dies in this world, he's really dead, right? There is no life after death for Esav because he has chosen to make the immediate and the world that he lives in the only reality. Ki lo hayalo sham chelek, he has no portion there in the world to come. Uvechol hemshech yamav hu holech kidei lamut boto olam. And in all the continuation of his days, he is going in order to die in this world. This is it. This is all he's got. Uvaze yomar. And in this pasuk, in this statement that he makes to Yaakov, Eini kamocha. Yaakov, I'm not like you. Sha'ata holech b'chayecha kedei lichyot be'etzem ba'olam haba. Do you go through your life to live essentially in your most essential part, spiritually in the world to come? Aval ani ba'olam hazeh. Shehu ha'olech ani holech lamucha. I'm in this world. This is the world that I'm going to die in. In v'im kein lama zeli bechora, and if so, what do I need the birthright for? She'ushra le'olam haba, which is sort of established or going to give credibility in the world to come. Be'yot kohen la'Hashem, in being a kohen to Hashem. Now, so the Alshech here, I mean, he does this earlier, but the Alshech says the bechora is, again, like Rashi says, the avodat Hashem, the service of Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash. He says, that's irrelevant to me. I think what's very interesting to me about the Alshech and reading the Alshech sort of gave me the insight to understand why Esav's awareness of death as a constant companion doesn't make life more precious, but makes it less precious, right? For him, there is only this world. His soul, any part of himself that is immortal, doesn't count. Okay, we're going to pick up here. I guess we're not going to get to those midrashim. We're going to pick up here next week because the rest of the Alshech is very, very important here. And the Malbim, I really, really want to do with you, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to stop here and I will take questions. Okay. So I'm not looking at the chat. You know, I'm not a chat person. Please raise your hand. There's a way to do that on Zoom. I don't know what it is.
I think it's very interesting what you said. It really makes Esav a carpe diem man.
Yes. Seize the day. Only the day. Right. By the way, that's the Roman. That was the Romans, right? Right.
It's apicorsis. It's the epitome of apicorsis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Noreen.
I'm a little uncomfortable when they start reading into the story about Olam Haba, Olam Haba, because in the Torah, there's no concept of a life after, really. It's not really a strong view. And it's like imposing something that wasn't there.
Okay, I hear that. But you could take the Alshech's insights in a different direction. And even if you don't want to see Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, which is his dichotomy, he sets it up. He doesn't take it from himself. It's in Chazal. But let's not take that dichotomy. Let's look at something else. Okay. I'm going to die. Why should I care about my descendants?
No.
Right. I'm going to die. Why should I care about serving God?
That's legitimate.
Okay. I'm going to die. Why do I care if other people live or die? Right. In other words, that even if you don't want to go with the Alshech's view, what the Alshech is, I think, and he's not using explicitly psychological language, but he is alluding to the thinking that underlies Esav's nihilism.
Yeah.
It's right. Yeah. You know, like, why shouldn't I do whatever I want whenever I want it? All that matters is me, and all that matters is this moment now. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions before we move on? Yeah, Marilyn.
Yeah, no, I just think that the whole concept of him coming in and Yaakov telling him you have to pay for the soup, it's not a brotherly act if your brother is hungry.
Not saying you have to pay for the soup. He's not.
So
I think you're reading it wrong. I think the Rashbam's reading is correct. He says to him, I'm asking you to sell me for money. I'm asking you to sell me for money, the bechora, and then we can sit down and have a meal together.
I know, but isn't that?
But that's not a brotherly, you know, if your brother and your twin brother comes in, and so and you say you have to pay me to eat something, to me it's showing that there was a real sinna between the brothers from the beginning, because
no, but there's something else you're ignoring here. Esav doesn't say, give me a bowl of soup. He says, pour it down my throat.
I know.
Right? Okay. He says, pour it down my throat. This is not, hey, ooh, that smells good. Yaakov, can I have a bowl? This is not, I am a voracious predator. Pour it down my throat. And what does Yaakov say? And what does Yaakov say? And remember, he has to live with Esav, right? He has to live with Esav. What does Yaakov say? He says, wait a minute. You know what? Let's straighten this out. You have something I want. I have something you want. Let's do it that way. And he's right.
Okay. No, I just see that you, from the tension between the different personalities and is there. So you see it right away.
They're fighting in the womb already.
Right. You know, also, what about the money? Where does Yaakov have money to buy it, according to, was it Rashbam or somebody?
He's a shepherd, and Esav has money too. I mean, he's a hunter. He probably sells his meat. Right? Yaakov is a shepherd. He has flocks and he has his own money. Even Rivka has her own money. Why do you think they wouldn't have money?
I thought because it's a paternal society and the father owns everything.
I don't know. I mean, I would assume they have money.
I'm just curious where you would get money as a young boy, but okay.
What? No, they're not children. They're not children. Yeah, no, they're young men.
Okay.
Right. Any other questions?
Jimmy?
iPad Toronto. I forgot your name.
Joseph, but it's okay.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Yes. No. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. No. I was thinking the same thing. The previous one. That everything is owned by their father. So how can he sell the soup? He's making it from his father's ingredients in his father's house, who's the head of the tribe. So it's just like the Bechora is not for one to sell. The soup isn't for his to sell. It's all out of his father's pocketbook.
He doesn't sell the soup and he doesn't buy the soup. He's selling the Bechora and he's buying the Bechora. And I don't know why you assume that they don't have money. I would imagine that even if you want to say their father gave them a maintenance or an allowance, whatever it is, they apparently do have money. They do have their own earnings.
So is this an indication that Jacob really didn't have fraternal feelings towards his brother at this point, that they were already before this a big split, not just in lifestyle, but, somebody who cares about somebody else wouldn't necessarily do what Jacob did. I'm not saying it's not warranted. Wait.
Let me ask you, do you think that Esav has fraternal feelings for Yaakov?
I think it might be a mutual that they both don't have feelings for each other.
I don't think we have indications either way. We don't have, the only thing we know about these brothers is that it's toward the end of the story. When we get to the encounter between the brothers after they've been apart for 22 years, then we have indications one way or another. At this point, we don't really know exactly what their relationship was. I would imagine they did not.
And they don't get along
in the womb.
And to give you another movie reference, which I know you're not a big fan of, The Godfather Part 2, where the Michael character says, "Nothing happens to my brother when my mother's alive." Which is basically what Esav is saying about Jacob until his parents pass away.
I would imagine that the director of Godfather borrowed it from the
It was an Italian, Esav. But it was a great director.
Okay. Not my thing. Okay. Noreen, what were you going to ask?
Robin. Yeah. The Torah doesn't deal with stuff like, where did they get the money? That's not important. They're dealing with values
I would assume they have money.
And, the Torah just doesn't fuss around with that kind of stuff. And I think it, for us to ask us to do that, that it should do that is ridiculous.
Okay. Robin, you had a question.
Yeah, yes. In terms of what you said, that the Rashbam viewed that the Bechorah was Yitzchak's properties, there is no indication in the Torah that Yaakov ever inherited that. If that was the Bechorah, it seems like everything he had was what he earned when he worked for Lavan.
Look, we don't know. The truth is that Yitzchak is a fabulously wealthy man. That's clear from the Psukim. He had a lot of money. Did Yaakov inherit something? He may have. Again, it's not particularly important. His wealth is self-earned. His wealth is earned from Laban when he works for Laban. Yeah. Yeah.
Robin,
go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just also had a follow-up. I think there's some sort of medrash that when Esav killed Nimrod, he got like Adam's coat or something that made him a great hunter. So if it made him a really great hunter, wouldn't that make him less likely to worry about dying?
No. Why would it make him? It makes him, if you look at the description of Nimrod's coat, the cloak or whatever you want to call it, in Bereishit Rabbah, which by the way is on the sheet that I gave you last week, it just says that all of the animals would come to him. That's what it says. That doesn't mean that if you're out in the field and you're, you know, something's behind you with claws and teeth, it doesn't mean that you're going to just, you know, walk away. It's dangerous. It's dangerous to be a hunter.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Any more questions?
No.
Yeah. Marilyn, go ahead.
You know, Beth said when Yaakov was running away, he said he didn't have anything. He's just running away with his makel. So it doesn't sound like he inherited money from Yitzchak at that point.
So there's some interesting midrashim about that too. Is it likely that Yitzchak would send him away with nothing? And he says, "Kibe makli avarti et hayardena." So when he's coming back with all of this wealth, and he's about to encounter his brother, he says, "Kibe makli avarti et hayardena." And there's some interesting midrashim about where is the presumed, you know, where is the presumed provisions, etc., that his father had given him. There's a midrash that talks about Esav sending his son to kill Yaakov, and Yaakov buys him off, gives him all his wealth for his life, you know. But again, maybe he has to get out of town in a hurry. Maybe Yitzchak is a man who leaves the running of the household to his wife. And it could be that Rivka gives him or doesn't give him. Certainly, he goes relatively with nothing, and he comes back with a great deal. Okay, any more questions, or can we move on to next week? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, have a great week.
Thank you. Thank you for.